From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host on the main stage at the Proctor's Theater in Schenectady, New York, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, everybody. Great show for you today. Adam Savage of the Mythbusters will be joining us later on. But first, we are really happy to be here in Schenectady, New York, just about 15 miles from the state capital, Albany, New York. But that raises a question. Why are we here rather than in the capital? Because our wives wouldn't let us go there. That's why. We don't know why the governors of New York State do what they do, but compared to Albany, Sodom itself was like a retirement community. You step onto the Capitol Plaza, the next thing you know, you're in a Quality Inn with a $4,000 an hour escort wearing nothing but black dress socks. Boom! So we promise, if you call us up and answer our questions, you will not end up holding a press conference with your unhappy spouse by your side trying not to cry. We think. The number, 1-888-WAIT-WAIT, that's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Sandra Lehman from Lighthouse Point, Florida.
Lighthouse Point, Florida? Mm-hmm. I always ask this about towns with names like yours. Is there a lighthouse and is there a point?
Well, there certainly is a lighthouse, and I think it sits at a point.
Really?
Yeah.
It's been my it's been my experience, and I haven't been everywhere, but there's very few points in Florida. There's no not a lot of point to it. No? Oh. Yes, there is a point?
I think so. But there's definitely a lighthouse.
Okay, that's good.
I've been there.
We'll accept that. Well, welcome to the show, Sandra. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First, say hello to a writer for the Boston Globe and author most recently of Moving the Chains, Tom Brady and the Pursuit of Everything, Mr. Charlie Pierce.
Hi, Charlie. Hi, Sandra.
Next, it's a native of Freeville, New York, the woman behind the syndicated advice column Ask Amy, Ms. Amy Dickinson.
Hi, Amy. Hi, Sandra.
And finally, say hi to a TV personality and the proprietor of the website Morocco180.com, Mr. Morocco.
Hi, Sandra.
Sandra, welcome to our show.
Thank you.
Now, I don't know what it was, but this week we just felt a little bit like dancing. So you're going to start us off with a game of Carl Castle's Countdown, in which Carl will play you three songs inspired by the week's news. Your job, figure out the news story behind at least two of them. Do that, you'll win our prize, Carl's voice on your home answering device.
Okay.
Ready to play?
Yes, I am.
Carl, what is the first number?
Peter, it's the showstopper from the musical Dreamgirls, and it was sung by a prominent woman this week.
And I am
boy, that'll stress the seams in the old pantsuit.
It won't. And I do want to point out that when that song is sung in the musical, everybody has already abandoned that character.
Right. That's right.
So who even, after Tuesday's results, told everyone that she was not going yet?
That has to be Hillary Clinton.
It is Hillary Clinton. You know, on medical dramas on TV, there's always that moment where Dr. McDreamy steps back from the patient and pulls down his mask and said, all right, let's call it. Let's call it, meaning, you know, let's mark the time of death. Well, imagine if the patient then sat up and yelled, on to West Virginia! Rumors from the campaign say that her senior advisors are now telling her to find a way to drop out gracefully, all except for her husband, Bill Clinton. Now, as a husband myself, I totally understand this. There are two questions in a marriage to which the answer is always, of course not. The first is, does this make me look fat? And the second is, am I destroying the Democratic Party?
She's tough. Do you think that she's going to become like one of those Japanese soldiers 20 years after World War II?
She'll emerge from a cave in Oregon still campaigning
for caucus votes. Complaining about Michigan and Florida.
Come on, let's put on your pundit hats. What's going to happen? Is she going to withdraw? And if so, how is she going to do it?
Hell no. Obama's going to be in the second year of his first term, and she's going to pop out of a closet. Yeah. I mean, you got to remember, she knows that place. She can be president without him ever knowing.
Carl, what's next on your playlist?
This time it's a touching soul classic that was sung at this week's inauguration of Russian President Dmitry Medvedev.
And darling, darling, stand by me. Oh, stand by me.
So who will be standing by Mr. Medvedev at all times, whether he likes it or not?
Vladimir Putin.
Exactly right. President Medvedev is a 42-year-old lawyer. He has no real qualifications to be president of Russia, except for two. First, he is extremely close to former President Vladimir Putin. And second, Mr. Putin has not yet chosen to have him killed. Putin named Medvedev to be his successor as president, and Medvedev, appreciative of that favor, immediately named Putin his prime minister as his first act. This means, of course, that Putin's considerable power and political apparatus are behind Medvedev. For example, and this is true, the state-run TV network Russia Today called the new president a, quote, Renaissance man because he likes yoga, the band Deep Purple, and he has a cat.
He's the only Deep Purple fan who does yoga and owns a cat.
Well, maybe that's why.
Or hasn't eaten the cat yet. But, you know what's great, though? When he gave his inaugural address, yeah. Putin stood right next to him drinking a glass of water,
that's
and you
right.
couldn't tell.
It was crazy. He says, I learned this trick from Dick Cheney. It's very tricky. Carl, can you finish up this dance party?
Sure can, Peter. And speaking of dances, this Nick Lowe rocker is what we're sure is going to be played as the first dance at a wedding this weekend.
Oh, I knew the bride when she used to rock and roll.
So what bride who used to rock and roll, not to mention drink while underage, will be getting married this weekend?
Well, I know politics really well, but entertainment. Huh?
Well, there's a well, actually,
this is both.
This is both. There's a political connection, a strong one, a
and
family
it could
connection.
Be very entertaining.
How about Jenna Bush?
How about Jenna Bush? Very
there
good.
We go.
Remember back in the day when the presidential daughter was getting busted for using a fake ID in bars back in Austin? Well, to be fair, the 7 years since have mellowed and matured her, showing that at least this one time, the apple teeny has fallen quite far from the tree. This weekend, she is marrying Henry Hager, himself the son of a senior Republican Party official. This whole thing could be part of a weird experiment in modern conservative eugenics. We'll know if it works if their first child is born and immediately says, heck of a job, mommy. Carl, how did Sandra do in our quiz?
Sandra had 3 correct answers, Peter, so that means she's a winner.
Very well done.
I get married in the morning. Ding dong, the bells are gonna chime. Pull out the stopper. Let's have a whopper and get me to the church on time.
Panel time for you now to answer some questions about this week's news. Amy, since we've pretty much shipped all our manufacturing jobs to China, if our economy is going to recover, tourism will be a big part of it. So the U.S. government is promoting a new vacation destination. Where?
The U.S. government, okay, would have been some federal facility, penitentiary somewhere?
Well, it is used to hold prisoners. Mm.
Guantanamo?
Yes, Guantanamo Bay.
Beautiful.
Sure, it is a prison operating outside the bounds of both American and international law and a blight on the U.S.'s reputation, but it's so much more. According to the Daily Mail newspaper in Britain, the U.S. military has been promoting its base at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, as an inexpensive R&R destination for service members and military contractors. They can go fishing, shopping, sun themselves on the beach, and also buy souvenirs at the Guantanamo gift shop, such as, here, I wish I was kidding, a child-sized T-shirt that reads, Future Behavior Modification Instructor. I don't know how successful this campaign is going to be, even within the military. So to help out, we have come up with some suggested slogans for the inevitable tourism promotion campaign. This is for, you know, Gitmo as a resort destination. Position stressful? Try our stress positions. All right, okay, we want a better one? Here we go. A great vacation you'll be forced to talk about. All right, this may be our favorite. Ready? Finding life a trial at Gitmo, we don't allow them. Free of charge, Mr. Gates.
Dad went to Gitmo, and all I got was this lousy near-drowning experiment.
Yeah, exactly. the waves are great for waterboarding.
B-A-C-A-T-I-O-N, in the summer sun.
Right now, it is time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game on the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, everyone. This is Ellen Mamadov. From New Jersey.
Hey, how are things in New Jersey?
Well, they're fine. I think it's raining outside, so I'm hoping it's going to get better soon.
You don't know? are you too depressed to go look?
No, I should go look because I have beautiful views of the Manhattan skyline from all my windows.
That.
All of them, wow.
Do you really?
Yeah.
But you don't look out the windows?
Well, I'm so used to the view that I hardly ever look anymore.
Oh. Well, welcome to our show, Ellen. You're going to play the game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Ellen's topic?
Oh, Ma, but we went to Branson last summer.
Now is the time when people start planning their summer vacations. The question is, though, after Disneyland, Dollywood, where else is worth going? Well, this week we read about a new and unexpected vacation destination in the world. Our panelists are going to tell you about three fabulous getaways, only one of which was in the news. Choose that real story. You will win Carl's voice on your home answering machine. First up, let's hear from Charlie Pierce.
Nobody expects the Spanish Inquisition. Except, of course, for the people who pay $1,500 apiece for the Tour de Torquemada package. A guided tour of dungeons in Spain that follows the track of the original inquisitorial courts. There are four different stops in the tour, and the guests spend one night in a renovated cell in each of four different dungeons. It's the isolation and the terror of expectation that draws them, says Bruno Alcazar, who conducts the tours. Once, you'd be dreading the next morning session with the bastinado. Now, it's just breakfast.
A tour of highlights of the Spanish Inquisition in Spain, of course. Your next story of a vacation spot that Condé Nast hasn't found yet comes from Amy Dickinson.
Some people vacation in Vegas or party in Paris, but why kick back in a place like Cancun when you can enjoy vacation video of your own digestive tract? Medical student Annie Scoggin was inspired by her studies to start a new tourism venture. Using laparoscopic cameras, Scoggin will film your innards from the cranium to the coccyx, and then superimpose pictures of you touring your very own pancreas. Think of it. You can travel down your own islets of Langerhans. Though many people can't stand the sight of their own spleen, Scoggin says, but when people get grossed out, I remind them of our company motto, Viva Vas Divarens!
A tour through your own body, through photographic means. And your last story about the latest in summer tourism comes from Mo Rocca.
Carnival, the beaches of Ipanema. Flying down to Rio has long been a vacationer's dream, but some visitors apparently prefer something a little less touristy, which is why one agency is offering chauffeured tours of the city's sprawling shanty towns, or favelas. Included in the package, a meet and greet with an armed drug dealer. On this trip, you're more likely to hear the strains of the girl from Intravena. A journalist posing as a tourist met a gunman who'd spent 9 years in jail. 9 years, that's 3,285 days, 3,284 nights. The unusual holiday begs a couple questions. Does this glamorize criminal activity? And if you're kidnapped, should you include a tip with your ransom? One thing's certain, after this vacation, you won't feel let down. You'll come down.
All right, then. Ellen? Here are your choices. This is one of these is a trip you could really take. Is it from Charlie Pierce, a trip to Spain to tour all the dungeons of the Spanish Inquisition, to experience all the terror of the heretics during the auto de fe? Is it from Amy Dickinson, a virtual tour of your own innards provided by medical laparoscopy? Or from Mo Rocca, a tour of the favelas and drug dealers who live there in Brazil? Which of these is the real tour that you can now take?
Those are all pretty crazy. Let's try the third story.
The third
story. The favela tour.
The favela tour. You're picking.
That sounds
are you picking? Does it sound like something you would want to do?
No, not personally.
Not personally, but it is sounds interesting. Okay, your choice then is Mo's story of the tour of the favelas in Rio. We spoke to someone who knew a little bit about this particular tour.
Essentially, what this tour company is offering is a chance to go into the shanty towns in Rio, which are known as favelas. And if you want to get your photograph taken near to a drug dealer, you can do that, so long as you don't show their face.
Well done.
It's the most...
That was Gary Duffy, the BBC's Brazil correspondent, explaining what tourists might see when touring Rio with drug dealers. Congratulations. You got it right.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
And you won a free trip.
Yes, exactly.
Tell her what she's won, Mo. Exactly.
First prize.
You're going to Rio. And you're not. Don't pack your bathing suit. All right.
You have earned a point for Mo just for being truthful. You have won our prize. Carl Castle will record the greeting for any home answering technology you may choose.
I can't wait. Thank you so much again.
Thank you, Ellen. Thanks for playing. And now the game where we ask an expert on one topic questions about something completely different. It's different for them, and it provides a laugh for us, so everybody wins. Most of us, when facing the truly eternal mystery, such as, are elephants really afraid of mice? Well, we just shrug our shoulders, go about our business. Not Adam Savage. On his Discovery Channel show, Mythbusters, he and his partner, Jamie Hyneman, go to any lengths, using any amount of explosives, to find out the truth. Adam Savage, welcome to Wait, Wait.
Thank you. Hello, Schenectady.
Now, we want to ask about the origin of the show. You were, if I'm not mistaken, by profession, a model maker, a guy who made cool stuff in San Francisco.
That's absolutely correct. I got to build models and spaceships for George Lucas and the Star Wars movies, the Matrix movies, and Terminator.
Wow.
Terminator 3, actually.
So you built like Keanu Reeves. I got to tell you, he looked good. He didn't move that well, but...
I worked on much more elaborate models than that.
All right. So you've busted or at least tested out many, many myths. Like I said, the one I mentioned earlier, you actually did test to see if elephants were afraid of mice.
That's correct. We were actually in South Africa filming with some great white sharks, and the weather prohibited us from going out on the boat, and we had a few days to kill, so we decided to just head inland and get a mouse and see if the elephants were actually afraid of it. And honestly, we thought we were just producing some extra kind of funny filler for the show. We had no idea that the elephant would be absolutely kind of visibly freaked out by seeing this tiny little mouse.
Do you think it was just that one elephant? Maybe had issues from
childhood, going way back?
Either that or it was a really big mouse.
Yeah. How did it express fear? How did it...
Well, see, we wanted to introduce the mouse to its environment kind of abruptly, so we took a piece of elephant dung and we hollowed it out, and we put what was then a very unhappy mouse inside this piece of elephant dung with a piece of monofilament tied to it so we could puppet the dung.
Well, I'm sorry, did you just say you could puppet the dung?
I did indeed.
All right.
And then as the elephant came wandering along, we moved the dung out of the way, and there was this very surprised little mouse. And the elephant absolutely stopped in his tracks and the best way I can describe it is he tiptoed around the mouse.
Really?
But wait a minute. Wait a minute. Put yourself in the elephant's place. I mean, forgive me, but if a mouse emerged from your dung, I mean, don't you think... I would freak out. I'd say, what did I eat?
I'm not going back to that restaurant again, is what I'd say. But so you didn't bust that myth, in fact. It turned out to be true. I have to ask, what myth were you busting with the great white sharks?
We were doing a supersized special, so we decided to go where the biggest sharks we could find in the world are, and they happened to be great whites that leap completely out of the water in False Bay, South Africa, just south of Cape Town. And we went down there to find out if they were afraid of dolphins. We made a big fake dolphin out of basically a mattress.
But then what if they're just afraid of fake dolphins?
Yeah, what if they're afraid of mattresses? Yeah.
We absolutely proved both of those.
So that they're afraid of both mattresses and dolphins?
Fake dolphins.
Mattresses and fake dolphins.
All right, that's great.
Mattresses and fake, okay.
You did the famous one, I love this, about whether or not a plane could or could not take off if it was on a conveyor belt.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, I saw that.
And you actually put a plane on a conveyor belt.
We did. This was, you wouldn't believe the amount of discussion there is on the internet about this question. If you have a plane trying to take off and it's on a conveyor belt matching its speed in reverse, can it take off?
Well, I got to tell you, before the show, we started, well, you know, Adam did this thing, and we were like, well, of course the plane would take off. I'm like, no, of course it wouldn't. And we actually spent about 3 hours of our lives arguing this out. So, yeah, if you explain the problem briefly, the idea is, like, if the plane's not moving forward at all, would it still...
the answer?
Well, hold on. Well, explain the problem and then tell us what happened.
Well, the problem is that the question has a trick in it. It leads you to believe, just by the phrasing of the question, that that the plane will not move forward. And thus, the question is, can it take off if it's not moving forward? But that's actually not so true. The fact is, no matter how fast the conveyor belt is moving, the plane will move forward because a plane doesn't push along the ground. It pushes through the air. And the only reason the wheels are there is to keep the propeller from hitting the ground.
Right. So it doesn't matter. So you put a plane. How did you get a conveyor belt big enough to hold a plane up or a plane small enough to go in a conveyor belt?
We did both. We actually got an ultralight plane that was in exactly, you know, a real plane shape that weighed about 500 pounds and a willing pilot. And we got a quarter mile.
Drunk. Yeah. Go ahead.
I'm so disappointed in American Airlines.
So you were saying, so you put this guy in an ultralight plane.
We got the ultralight plane, and we put it on a runway on top of a quarter mile long piece of tarpaulin
that
we were dragging with a pickup truck in the opposite direction.
Okay.
And it actually turned out we had to do it at exactly dawn because at any other time of day, even the slightest wind would turn this thing into just a big twisting ribbon. So we only had one chance to get it right, and we did it. The truck took off in the opposite direction, 25 miles an hour, which was the takeoff speed of the plane, and the plane absolutely lifted off, something the pilot of the plane didn't think it would do, in fact.
Wow. So all the internet discussions have ended?
No, absolutely not. They all... The primary argument that remains on the internet is, well, they did it wrong because the plane took off.
Yeah. One of the questions I have is, after so many years of doing the show, how do you keep coming up with these myths?
Oh, there's absolutely no shortage of it. We say we're going to run out of myths when people stop believing stupid things.
You have a long and fruitful career in front of you. No, are you ready to do this? Because we're ready to do this.
I'm ready to do this.
All right, let's do it. Adam Savage, we're delighted to have you with us. We've invited you here to play a game that today we are calling...
Without you, George Hamilton would never have been able to star in Love at First Bite.
In other words, you're Bram Stoker, the mostly mediocre 19th century Irish novelist who did happen to write Dracula. Using Eric Newsom's new popular history of vampires, The Dead Travel Fast, we're going to ask you three questions about Bram Stoker. Get two right, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners. Carl's voice in the home answering machine. So, Carl, who is Adam Savage playing for?
Adam is playing for Cherie Morgan of Rensselaer, New York.
Ready to play?
I'm ready.
All right, your first question. The authorship of Dracula may not have been the most impressive achievement of Bram Stoker's life. because he also managed to do what? Did he A, star in the first cigarette advertisement, B, invent the idea of the author's book tour, or C, steal Oscar Wilde's girlfriend?
That couldn't have been hard.
I'm going to have to go with C, steal Oscar Wilde's girlfriend.
Stealing Oscar Wilde's girlfriend. You're right, sir. He stole Oscar Wilde's girlfriend.
His girlfriend, Ned.
Stoker became friendly with Oscar Wilde while at college, and there he met Florence Balcom, who was attached to Wilde. Eventually, Florence got tired of waiting around for Wilde to make the first move, so she went off with Stoker instead. Next question, very good. Next question. Stoker's first book was not, to put it mildly, as much of a success as his later work. What was it? Was it A, a romance between a Dublin ferryboat captain and a lost mermaid? Or B, a nonfiction guide to the duties and procedures of the lower-level Irish bureaucracy? Or C, a catalog of the different kinds of potatoes grown in County Kilkenny?
I'm going to go with B.
You're going to go with B? The nonfiction guide to the duties and procedures of the lower-level Irish bureaucracy. That page, Turner. You're right. You are right. The book was called The Duties of Clerks of Petty Sessions in Ireland. It did not inspire any movie adaptations. Well, this is impressive. Let's see if you can go for perfect. On whom, according to a widely accepted theory held by Stoker biographers, did Bram Stoker model the character of Dracula? Was it A, the great American poet Walt Whitman, B, his own mother-in-law, or C, Santa Claus?
Wow, that is an awesome question.
Thank you, sir.
Very interesting.
I'm going to go with A. I'm going to go with Walt Whitman.
You think he based Dracula on Walt Whitman? You're right, he did.
Amazing.
Although,
I sing the body electric.
Although, according to the biographers, it wasn't an act of jealousy, it was an act of appreciation. Stoker was a huge fan of Whitman's. He corresponded with him for years from across the Atlantic. You see, in addition to being a very powerful, sexually liberated character, much like Whitman, Stoker's Dracula is also described in the book as looking just like Walt Whitman in real life.
Wow.
There you go. Something you didn't know.
I had no idea.
Carl, how did Adam Savage do on our quiz?
Adam aced it, Peter. 3 correct answers, so he wins for Cherie Morgan.
There you go. We should have known better than to go up against a guy with his own lab and acetylene torches. You did well. You seem to have a gift for this ferreting out truth. Maybe you should make something of it.
I think you're right. I think I will.
Well, you did good here, Adam Savage. Thank you so much for being with us. Adam Savage is one of the Discovery Channel's Mythbusters. Adam Savage, thank you so much.
Right. Thanks, Peter.
Take care.
Really funny.
Right now, though, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Mo, a story that restores our faith in democracy simply through his mastery of civic procedure, a resident of Denver, Colorado, forced the city council to formally consider the creation of an independent board to govern what important issues?
UFOs is too easy.
But it's correct.
Oh, okay. Don't overthink it.
You're a simple man.
This last Thursday, the Denver City Council held a review and comment session on the proposal to create a, quote, extraterrestrial affairs commission. It is the brainchild of one Jeff Peckman, who, and this will not surprise you, is 54, single, and lives with his parents. And he's a little concerned about the inevitable culture clash to come. Quote, it is important because if you're driving down the highway and you saw a crash of a small spaceship in a car or a bus full of kids, you really wouldn't know what to do, unquote. His solution?
The first thing I'm doing is not call City Hall.
Well, That's because his solution is to convene a task force.
Oh, wait, a task force?
A task force, a commission to study the problem.
Okay.
They had to consider the proposal in a public meeting. Initial reports say that everybody at the meeting was against it, except, of course, for Mr. Peckman and some guy in the back who didn't say anything but kept nodding his heads. Charlie, animal behaviorists studying squirrels in Massachusetts have infiltrated the close-knit squirrel community. With the clever use of what?
They used ferrets with big bushy that grafted bushy tails.
No, it's much more technologically advanced than that.
Mechanical squirrels.
Yes.
Yeah.
They used
robot squirrels.
They used a robot squirrel named Rocky. Danger, Bullwinkle! Danger, Bullwinkle!
No doubt about it. I gotta get another hat.
Researchers at Hampshire College in Massachusetts created the robotic squirrel.
Where there are
that explains
squirrels.
It. Yes. That explains it.
They created the robotic squirrel to interact with squirrels outside in their natural environment. The robot, nicknamed Rocky, chit-chats in squirrel language, waves his tail, and helps researchers understand how squirrels behave. It's very touching, the squirrel says to the other squirrels, "Teach me how to feel. I want to be a real squirrel." Mo,
yes.
Mo, this week the Washington Post published the winning entries in their children's poetry contest in honor of National Poetry Month. The contest was marred when the young, adorable winner of the contest was credibly accused of what?
Well, plagiarism's too easy.
And yet it is correct.
You keep...
What am I getting?
You know, you get...
Who would you steal that from?
You get one try with that shtick. I mean, come on.
Well, no. I mean, I'm not trying... It's not false modesty. It's like I'm like the special panelist today.
Yeah. The very special.
And here's a question for Mo. What's your favorite color? That's right.
I mean, come on.
This 10-year-old Stephen Ambrose in training submitted a poem to the Washington Post's Kids Post Poetry Contest. That was really good, but it was also written by well-known children's poet Shel Silverstein decades before she was born. The Post ran the poem as a winning entry and then was inundated with mail from readers noticing the similarities. The Kids Post editor then called the young plagiarist. She apologized but added that she had only copied the poem when she saw the best minds of her generation destroyed by madness.
I'm imagining the enforcer coming in. Hey, the sidewalk ends here.
Coming up, it's Lightning Fill in the Blank, but first it is time for Carl to recreate some voices from the week's news. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. You can always send an email to waitwait@npr.org. You can also go to our website if you like, at waitwait.npr.org, where you can find out about attending our weekly live shows. At the Chase Auditorium in Chicago, you can also download the Wait Wait podcast for your computer or MP3 player. Hi, you're on Wait Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, it's Roger Koopman in Raleigh, North Carolina.
Hey, how are things in Raleigh?
It's nice.
You just had the big primary there in North Carolina.
We did.
That must have been exciting for you guys to play a role in this presidential contest.
Ooh, we felt very special.
Did you really?
Yes.
Did you actually get to meet any of the candidates, being a local politician?
Yes, I actually got to meet Hillary.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, all 10 seconds of it.
Yeah.
And I did not get to meet Obama. I also got to shake hands with Bill Clinton.
Yeah.
And
that's becoming
that was
kind
it.
Of common, actually. Yeah. I've never met Bill Clinton, and I used to think that made me sad, but now I realize it makes me special, because I'm the only person left. Well, Roger, it's nice to have you with us. You're going to play Who's Carl this time? Carl Castle will now recreate three quotes from this week's news. If you correctly identify or explain just two of them, Carl will record the greeting on your home answering machine. Ready to go?
We'll try.
All right, here is your first quote.
If somebody tries to stop the march to democracy, we'll seek them out and kill them. We must be tougher than hell. Stay strong. Stay the course. Kill them. Be confident. Prevail. We're going to wipe them out. We are not blinking.
That was from a new book by former U.S. Lieutenant General Ricardo Sanchez. He was quoting someone making what Sanchez called a confused pep talk about the situation in Fallujah in Iraq back in April 2003. Who said all that apparently in one breath?
George Bush?
Yes, that's right. It is George Bush. It was just a month after the U.S. invaded Iraq and Muqtada al-Sadr was causing trouble for U.S. forces there in Fallujah. According to Sanchez, during a video conference from the White House, President Bush let loose with what sounded like a Tourette's version of all his talking points about winning the war in Iraq. Apparently, the president then had to be taken away when he started a tastes great, less filling argument with himself.
Were there any verbs in that, by the
way? Well, kill, I think, is a verb. Kill, prevail.
Something was shorting out at that point.
It was both a pep talk and his 2004 re-election campaign, I think.
It was like somebody gave him the presidential speak and say.
All right, very good. Here is your next quote.
There are all these different factions out there. Everyone is sniping at each other, and we have no real plan.
That was an anonymous member of the House of Representatives talking to the website Politico.com about his party's chances in November. What party is sniping and having a hard time coming up with a plan to win?
I assume this is the Republican Party.
It is the Republican Party. There you are. The Republicans have beaten the Democrats at everything else, so why not self-destruction? For once. The party's dire straits were exposed by a special congressional election in Louisiana where the Democrat won a seat that's been held by a Republican for 3 decades. And then a GOP congressman, Vito Fisella of New York, was arrested for driving drunk over to the house where his mistress lived with his illegitimate 3-year-old daughter. But GOP leaders did point out that at least Fisella wasn't driving over to Jeremiah Wright's church. On Wednesday, President Bush tried to buck up the GOP House membership with a rally where he told them, quote, "We must be tougher than hell. Stay strong. Stay the course. Kill them. Be confident. Prevail. We're going to wipe them out." We remember, of course, the president was once a cheerleader. You're doing very well. Here is your last quote.
"It was a moment, and it was real. I just felt that way, and you were egging me on, Oprah."
That was a movie star saying that his decision to jump up and down on Oprah's couch a couple of years back was Oprah's fault. It was just so springy. Who?
Ah, this must be the Mission Impossible star, Tom Cruise.
Very good, yes. It's been 3 years. How the time has flied. Since Tom Cruise went on Oprah, and when asked about his then-girlfriend Katie Holmes, he jumped up and down on her couch shouting, "I'm not gay." No, he didn't do that. He talked about how much he loved her. Well, according to Cruise, it was Oprah herself that released the beast. But Cruise was contrite, saying that he shouldn't have argued with Matt Lauer and Brooke Shields at the same time about psychiatric meds, and that, yes, someday soon, he will release Miss Holmes back to her family. No, not true. Some speculate that Cruise is on this publicity, campaign because he's worried about his new movie called Valkyrie. It's a $100 million epic about a failed Nazi plot to kill Hitler. All smiles and laughs. The movie's release has been delayed twice now, and there are rumors that the problem with the film is the scene in which Cruise's character tries and fails to get Hitler to take a free personality test. It's called an E-meter, mein Führer, and it will solve your problem. Carl, how did Roger do in our quiz?
Very well, Peter. Roger had 3 correct answers, so he wins our prize.
Very well done. Congratulations.
You're a big fan.
Thank you so much for calling.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Now on to our final game, Lightning Fill-in-the-Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
Mo Rocca and Charlie Pierce each has 3 points. They're tied for first. Amy Dickinson has 2.
Amy, you're in third place, so you're up first. The clock will start when I begin your first question. Fill-in-the-blank. UN planes began landing on Myanmar on Thursday with relief supplies for victims of the blank.
Tidal wave. Cyclone.
Cyclone. It was a cyclone. U.S. military officials announced that one of the suicide bombers in a string of attacks in Iraq had been a detainee at blank.
Guantanamo? No. They don't get out. Wait a minute.
No, you're right. After you said it, even though you doubted yourself. A Tibetan woman was the torchbearer who held the Olympic flame aloft at the top of blank.
Mount Everest.
Right. A motorist in Britain caught mooning a traffic camera will be fined for blanking.
Flashing on a flashing yellow.
No, for... good, though, for not wearing a seatbelt.
Oh.
Irvine Robbins, Jamocha Almond Fudge fan and co-founder of Blank, died at age 90 this week.
Baskin Robbins.
Yes, scientists in Australia said that their gene map of the blank proves that it is part mammal, part reptile, and part bird.
Platypus?
Yes. After a four-year court battle, an Englishman has cleared his name after receiving a fine for blanking.
Flashing on a flashing yellow.
No, for playing river dance music too loudly on his car stereo. 4 years ago, Marcus Aitken...
The Irish suffered enough at the hands of the British.
4 years ago, Marcus Aitken pulled over while enjoying the Celtic dance music phenomenon and asked a policewoman for directions. The policewoman, clearly not a fan of step dancing, charged Aitken for playing the music too loud. This week, a judge threw out all charges. He said, quote, come on, it's Riverdance. We're not talking Lord of the Dance Feet of Flames here. Carl, how did Amy do in our quiz?
Amy had 5 correct answers for 10 more points. She now has 12 points, and Amy has the lead.
Well, well done. Okay, we have flipped a coin. Charlie has elected to go last. That means, Mo, you're up next. Fill in the blank. Congressional Democrats unveiled an energy bill that would tax the huge profits of blanks.
Oil companies.
Right. Arianna Huffington revealed that John McCain told her that in the 2000 election he did not vote for blank.
George Bush.
Right. On Monday, the White House sent out blank to give the administration's first response to the cyclone in Myanmar.
Laura Bush.
Right. Mildred Loving, whose Supreme Court battle succeeded in overturning laws banning blank, died this week at age 68.
Interracial marriage.
Exactly right. In Scotland, an actor on stage collapsed and had to be taken to the hospital just as blank.
Going into his 10 o'clock number.
No. His character had supposed to be having a heart attack.
Oh, cool. Method.
So everybody just stood there and said, and now you get up. And he didn't. For Catholic World Youth Day, thousands of young worshipers will receive blanks from Pope Benedict.
A fruitcake.
No. No, they're going to receive text messages. Hello, how are you? The Pope.
How are you?
Best known for his crossover hit, Make the World Go Away, country singer Blank died this week at age 89.
Make the world go away. Hank Williams V.
No. Eddie Arnold.
Okay.
An Illinois man threw a party to show off the blank he had made for himself.
The Abe Lincoln blow-up doll.
No, a casket designed to look like a Pabst Blue Ribbon can. Mm-hmm.
I got hard ones.
Bill Bramante of suburban Chicago had an answer for his friends who teased him about his favorite beer. Hey, if you love Pabst Blue Ribbon so much, Bill, why don't you marry it? Well, since that's only legal in Vermont, Bramante did the next best thing. He made his own PBR can-shaped coffin. It's so well made, it will preserve his remains for eternity, barring some desperate, thirsty frat boys with shovels.
First of all, anyone with experience with a beer knows that a Pabst Blue Ribbon can doesn't preserve anything.
Carl, how did Mo do in our quiz?
Mo had 4 correct answers for 8 more points. He now has 11, but Amy still has the lead with 12
points. Wow. All right. We're rooting for the New Yorker. How many, then, does Charlie need to win this thing?
5 correct answers.
All right, here we go, Charlie. This is for the game. The people of blank began the celebration of their nation's 60th anniversary.
Israel.
Right. Last weekend, Steve Ballmer announced that Microsoft was ending its attempt to take over blank.
Yahoo.
Right. Gunfire broke out after Hezbollah leaders said that actions by the government of blank amounted to a declaration of war.
Lebanon.
Right. After what's believed to be the worst rendition ever of I Shot the Sheriff, Jason Castro got voted off blank.
American Idol.
Right. Police in Charles County, Maryland arrested 2 men who robbed a CVS drugstore before leading the cops on a chase in a blank.
A golf cart.
No, Good Humor ice cream truck. Ding, 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 ding. The breakdown of second-place finisher 8 Bells overshadowed Big Brown's win in this year's blank.
Kentucky Derby.
Right. After he apologized for mistakes in his personal life, it was announced that blank won't be considered for the Olympic baseball team.
Roger Clemens.
Right. A Utah police chief blanked while demonstrating how to dislodge a jammed handgun during a training exercise.
Shot himself in the foot.
He did.
Woo!
The ankle.
Awesome.
It's happened again. The Riverdale, Utah police chief, during his safety demonstration, did manage to unjam the handgun successfully. As promised, he unjammed it right into his own ankle. Students at the training session took copious notes and said they learned a lot about keeping the shooty part of the gun pointed away. Carl, did Charlie do well enough to win?
He needed 5 correct answers. He had 7 correct answers. So at 17 points, Charlie Pierce is this week's champion.
I killed them. I destroyed them. Get them. I'm not backing down. Whoop.
Hit. Since the press won't be allowed, we are going to ask our panelists to predict what will be the big news out of Jenna's wedding this weekend at the Crawford Ranch. But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Angie's List, providing firsthand consumer reviews on local service like plumbers, painters, movers, and now doctors. Details at angieslist.com. The members of the National Association of Realtors, working on behalf of America's residential and commercial property owners, on the web at realtor.com, and the Annenberg Foundation, advancing public well-being through improved communication, on the web at annenbergfoundation.org. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and Chicago Public Radio. In association with Urgent Haircut Productions, Doug Berman, executive producer. B.J. Lederman composed our theme. Our program is directed by Melody Kramer and produced by Mike Danforth and Emily Ecton. The senior producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Rod Abeed. Now, panel, what will be the big headline out of Jenna Bush's wedding in Crawford? Amy Dickinson.
Karl Rove would get a little tipsy, grab the wedding singer's mic, and belt out "The First Time I Ever Saw Your Face" to the father of the bride. Definitely going to happen.
Charlie Pierce.
Well, in keeping with the wedding tradition, at the head table, her father will line up John McCain, a 2008 SUV, a copy of the federal budget, and his wife, Laura, thereby providing something old, something new, something borrowed, and something blue.
And Mo Rocca.
Dick Cheney will catch the bouquet, ensuring another 8 years at the helm in the White House.
Well, if any of those things happen at Jenna Bush's wedding, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Amy Dickinson, Mo Rocca, and Charlie Pierce. Thanks to Alan Chartoff, Selma Kaplan, Donna Frank, and everyone at WANC-FM, Northeast Public Radio. Thanks to our audience here at the Proctor's Theater in Schenectady, New York. Thanks to all of you for listening. I am Peter Sagal. We will see you next week. This is NPR, National Public Radio.